back to another episode of Lab Talks. It's my pleasure today to be joined by Amy Williams, the CEO and founder of GoodLoop. Amy, would you mind telling us who GoodLoop are, what you guys do, and take it from there?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be on the pod. I run a company called GoodLoop. We are a technology company that embeds social impact into paid media strategies to make paid media work harder and have some, you know, some positive impacts in the world.
Nice. How did you come to that? It'd be interesting because it's quite a unique approach to ads online. So like what kind of brought you to GoodLoop, as it were?
Well, I've always worked in advertising. I've always sort of had a bit of a love-hate relationship with our industry. I think most people do.
They do, yeah.
Depends on the day as to how much love and how much hate. I started my career at Ogilvy, and so very like classically trained advertising agency world, and spent like a large chunk of my time making very glamorous fabric conditioner ads.
Nice.
I think I learned some quite formative things in that process. I learned that to build a brand, you have to talk about something more interesting than fabric conditioner. And when a consumer is at shelf deciding between fabric conditioners, they're all roughly the same price. They all kind of look the same. They all smell the same. They all clean your clothes. So differentiation and price desensitivity and a lot of those sort of long-term customer values, they come from something deeper and more meaningful and more interesting. And so I think like that experience kind of grounded me in like the strategic role of good in our industry. And I'm fascinated by that because there aren't many industries where doing good is a business strategy. Often it sits in the call center or, you know, an investment, perhaps, you know, maybe a CSR initiative or a shareholder initiative. But marketing is a very unique aperture through which social impact has a very clear ROI. And I think that's really, really interesting. But the hate side of the relationship for me was like, I was never really proud of how our industry turned up in people's lives. Like a lot of advertising, especially online advertising, is quite interruptive and unpleasant, and just sort of follows you around the internet trying to sell you a handbag you looked at once. And like, it just seemed to me like those two concepts were so sort of opposed. You know, a brand wants to stand for something and be meaningful and talk about something that matters whilst also showing up in these shitty ad experiences that like are quite unpleasant online. So that was kind of the original sort of genesis of GoodLoop almost 9 years ago now, was like, how do we build online media experiences that are as positive and respectful as the brands that buy them?
That leads me quite nicely to the next question. So like, how do you do that? Like, what is the process by which that happens?
So we have two arms of the business. We have GoodLoop and then we have GoodMeasures. GoodLoop is a media technology company that embeds social impact into the ad experience. So if you don't press that tempting skip button, or if you don't scroll past your Instagram stories, or if you don't skip past your ad on Spotify, then you unlock a donation funded by the advertiser. So the advertiser gets significantly higher engagement rates and the user gets to do good for free. And through that mechanic, we've raised over $12 million for all sorts of charities around the world and delivered some really, really amazing results for our advertisers. On the GoodMeasures side, we actually we go under the hood and we look at the social impact from a much more structural perspective, measuring and working to reduce the environmental impact of the ads that we serve across the internet.
And how do you find that the measurement side of things resonates? Because let me say attribution could be better on online ads. So I think it's interesting that the approach you've taken isn't what you traditionally expect when you put together a media plan, you know, like how good the ad is, I guess you'd say. And then like, what impact did it have not only on the user, the cause, the brand, but then also like the environment seems to be quite a different lens to look at measurement of ads.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I almost think it's more helpful to think about the environmental impact as a conversation about waste.
Okay.
So it's not looking at attribution of success. I mean, we do look at that on the media side of our business. We look at brand lift and engagement lift and, you know, very concrete measures of ROI from the media activation. But on the sustainability piece, it's really more about how do we reduce waste? Like any sustainability conversation is basically about how do we reduce waste, right? Let's take outside of our industry, fashion. You know, fast fashion is about highly wasteful means of production where people buy and dispose of fashion versus buying one piece of clothing that's more expensive, but it lasts you 10 years. That exact same idea is true within sort of a digital ecosystem. The more waste, both is a waste of dollars and a waste of carbon.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think one of the things that I harp on about a lot is just like how inefficient capital is when you spend it online, you know, like whether, and we talk about that in terms of like the fees that people pay, but yeah, it has like generally, I guess this is the other side of the same coin. It's like less wastage equals more efficiency, right? And I think that that is something that needs to be looked at more closely by people that buy and sell programmatic ads, and I don't think it necessarily is, but I get it sounds like we're both trying to change that.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like there are lots of new innovations that are sort of grappling with that question in different ways, and I actually, one of the things I really love about sort of the sustainability angle to programmatic is that, you know, it's like a beacon of light that you can shine in shadowy corners. When you're asking about the carbon footprint of an ad, what you are actually asking about is the supply path and the end destination and the quality of that end destination and its likelihood to produce a return. All of those questions are questions that you should be asking if you're looking at SPO or reducing MFA or, you know, cleaning up your programmatic buy anyway. But those questions can be difficult. They can unearth complicated answers and they can point fingers, whereas sustainability is a very innocent lens through which to ask difficult questions. So I find with many of our clients, they, of course, care about the planet, but they also find it a really like helpful way to challenge the unchallengeable.
Yeah, I think that is a good way to take it, because I sometimes think that the wastage, if you want to call it that, is like a feature of the system, not necessarily a bug, you know? So like...
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I think so. Just like if you kind of really just like zoom out into the way that like companies raise money, and do you know what I mean? There's a reason that people kind of looking to make stuff slightly overcomplicated, you know, because it kind of gives you a reason to exist to some degree. And I think that simplification can be the antithesis of that and can, yeah, make people squirm when you ask some questions, you know. So I think it's... that's quite a nice way to frame it, where you don't necessarily point fingers. You kind of like open palm it. Yeah. Like, what can we do about it? How can we waste less? And I think it's interesting. Yeah, there are a lot of issues, I think, with programmatic advertising in its current form. And I wonder, aside from, I guess that we can talk more about the efficiency or wastage, but is there anything else that you kind of see systemically wrong with the way that ads are bought and sold online?
I think you've sort of alluded to it a bit, but the incentive structures is something we don't always have full view into. How people are incentivized and who's making money from certain behaviors. Like an example, like within the sort of media side of our business, the good loop side, where we embed social impact into the ad experience, it often strikes me how few ad tech vendors are incentivized to create positive user experiences. They are paid by the advertiser based on a maximum number of eyeballs and a maximum, you know, metric of attention, however you quantify that.
Yeah.
And attention can be stolen. Attention can be forced. You know, I pay attention to shitty ads that get in my way. It doesn't mean I'm enjoying them or I'm appreciative of the brand that put them there, but it is attention. And so how are we incentivizing these ad tech vendors? They have, the user is not a stakeholder in their business model. And that feels broken to me.
Yeah.
In a quite fundamental way. Similarly, like the advertisers often, the actual brands don't even have direct relationships with the people creating the user experiences for these end users. You know, so many of these ad tech companies deal with the agencies, and the agencies have you know, preferred rates and partners and all of that structure in place. But if you ask a brand manager at General Motors who is teased, you know, that relationship might not exist. And that feels like it always comes down to simplification to me. Like, the more you can simplify the supply path, the more directly you can work with the people that are creating the ad experiences, whether that's going direct to publisher, whether that's building curation packages with your publisher partners, or whether that's understanding the ad tech that's creating your user experiences. Like, the more you have those relationships directly, the more you reduce waste and the more you can understand the incentive structures that are at play.
Yeah, I think you're right. We, some of the team were at a conference last week and just bumped into a friend of one of the people that works at Alchemy, who is a product manager at a company. And we've been working with that company for some of their media spend, and they got chatting. It's like, well, I this is my product. I own it. And I speak to the product marketing team, who speak to the marketing team, you speak to the media agency, who then speak to you. And we're just like, why don't you just speak to us? You know, yeah. Like, it kind of that in and of it, like, that's even before you've bought an ad, you know, like, just like the time that has been wasted, and like the message gets slightly changed on how it's being marketed, and then it gets changed again. And it's like, how good is the note taking just in that process, get to the point where we even then figure out what they're trying to do. It just, like, that in and of itself just seems like a bit of a waste of time, in my way. Arguably it is. But
I mean, that's,
there's reasons for those processes, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's so established, isn't it? Those layers of process. But the more disintermediation we can have, and the more the simplification, I think it can be applied across every layer of how we work and how we buy media. We are at Goodloop working to get a lot closer to our brand partners, and that's been a really fruitful strategy for us.
I can imagine. Yeah, I think it's well, you're speaking to the people that are looking to sell the product, you know, like, that is different to people that are looking to, like, buy media on behalf of a brand. Like, those two actions are fundamentally different, albeit the same goal, but like very different functions. So I can totally see how that makes sense. And you're starting to see that with the way that I think the agencies are changing their business models. You know, like, there's a lot of acquisitions of technology. So, like, to some degree, our agencies becoming ad networks, you know, like, and then there's like mergers of agencies. So, like, I think it's an interesting time for media agencies to, like, truly understand the value that they add. And certainly they do. I think it's just, like, really refining that. Like, you have agencies like Publicis, for example, that seems to be, like, running away with it at the moment, like, winning clients left, right, and center. Like, they're clearly doing something very well, and I think that it's interesting to see their competitors looking to capture what that is.
But to your point, like, that I think speaks to that Epsilon acquisition and the way that they've driven, like, a data strategy that is layered, you know, on top of a service layer.
Yeah, it's and I think particularly with, I don't know about you, but, like, I try and keep up with what's going in the world of AI and LLMs, and it's like something new comes out every week. And I think that it will, without a doubt, have a significant impact on the way that media is bought and sold. And I think just, like, trying to stay on top of that is, it makes my head spin. You know, like, it's, I've never seen an industry, I mean, there's an absolute boatload of cash that's being plowed into it, which kind of helps with iterations of products, but as far as what's possible, I think it's, that is going to have a significant impact on the way, I mean, the internet works, probably, without kind of getting too existential about it. But yeah, it's going to be
You have to, right? You have to get existential about it. It is existential. Like, it is going to change everything. But I feel quite optimistic. I mean, there are obviously pockets of the future where AI is terrifying. But in our sphere of influence, I feel very optimistic about the role AI plays. You know, I feel quite let down by the way that our industry has approached brand safety. And like, it's very disappointing to constantly receive block lists from our clients with really, really grossly generalized terms being completely blocked, you know, and AI brings so much more nuance to understanding the contextual moment in time in which a term is used. You know, at the moment, for instance, you know, we're all ramping up to start working on Pride Month campaigns. You know, Good Loop, we do a lot of work around supporting and celebrating the LGBTQIA community. And obviously, there are a ton of brands that lean in and do a lot of good in the month of June. However, those same brands will often send us a block list that includes terms such as gay or lesbian or trans. And I understand that the word trans has become very mired in like a culture war and has become extremely culturally sensitive. I completely understand that there are contexts in which a Applebee's ad doesn't want to be next to a very, very hot button topic. But equally, you can't say that you're a brand that supports Pride Month if you are cutting off the oxygen to the journalism that's supporting and amplifying that community. And this is where I see AI have a profoundly positive impact, is bringing nuance to a very, very blunt tool of brand safety.
I think, like, particularly news publishers get hit pretty hard by this. I think, like, there's certainly bad news, but there's also good news. And I think a lot of the times words that they were perhaps looking to block would probably be the most contextually relevant place for them to serve an ad as far as news is concerned.
Totally.
You know, like, it's just
like, let's talk about, like, what is bad. Like, you're right, there's bad news and good news, but is bad news a bad place to be? I mean, it depends on the brand, right, and the moment. I mean, I actually, you know, I had this vision when we all sort of lurched into the pandemic and COVID struck. I had this like vision for a product that I never managed to get off the ground, but it was an immediate gut reaction from every single advertiser we work with to add COVID to their block list, to add COVID and coronavirus and all of those words to their block lists. And so suddenly, basically 100% of news was blocked overnight. And you know, The Guardian reported losing like 70% of their revenue overnight, right? Mm. Bad news. It's really bad news, but it's also important news. And the brands that appear in those contexts, I would appreciate. I would consider those brands to be funding that news, not advocating for it. You know, I like, adjacency is different to funding something. And again, there's nuance. And like, so I was really trying to drive something there that was about being brands that funded that journalism. Frankly, you know, we didn't find a client that was brave enough. And since we've managed to do some cool stuff with news, Good Loop's very, very focused on funding news. But I still think there's a lot of work to be done to get advertisers more confident to appear in those moments where it might be bad, but having the right brand there to fund it is actually extremely important.
Yeah, it's one of those funny things that, like, I think only really applies to ads online. Because if you think, like, the billboards in Piccadilly Circus or Leicester Square, right? Like, someone's had their phone stolen outside of those billboards today for certain, you know, like, that's not good, but you can guarantee there is a billboard full of ads for whatever brand it is today, and they're like, yeah, that's all right, never mind that, you know, like, it's funny that it applies. Again, it's like, people look at the minutiae of the reporting because it's available to them, but like, really, what value do certain data points have? And I think that is where it's like quite refreshing that you at Good Loop are measuring something good outside of that. You know, it's like clicks, impressions, and YouTube rates. Important to know that something has been seen, but doesn't tell the entire story. You know, like, there is other parts of the story to be told. So yeah, I think what you're yeah. doing is really cool.
And I was actually, a bit disparaging about attention earlier, but I think that, you know, attention in this context could be a really powerful one. You know, the news that's important, news of the climate crisis, news of pandemics, news like this, news of trans rights issues and changes in legislation around our reproductive rights, like bad news, but important news. Mm-hmm. It's highly attended, right? The attention is high. I'm reading those articles. Yeah. And so, you know, attention can be a way for us to actually quantify the value of some of this stuff as well.
Yeah, I agree. Attention to me feels like a proxy for viewability in some instance. I think like there's like if the article exists and people have viewed it, like clearly it's got some attention. Oh, I just buy a billboard. And then, like, you don't know. You know, people walk past it, but you don't know how many. It's funny how some things are measured in one way and other channels are measured in a different way, but fundamentally are trying to do the same thing for a brand, you know, like raise awareness or change purchase intent or get subscriptions or sell t-shirts, whatever it is, you know, like advertising has one purpose. It's funny that it's measured differently across different channels. And I've never really understood that. It's a funny
good point. Programmatic has enabled us to measure more things. And so we've started to behave according to the measurement,
yeah,
rather than measure what the outcomes of how we behave. You know, like it's that classic human nature thing of whatever gets measured gets managed.
Yeah, it's funny. I get that one. Just like argue the toss about words, but like even just like making programmatic a noun has never really made any sense to me because it's just the way in which ads happen online. It's like you're not having got someone going, oh, quick, I'll buy that page impression that it fit, but 100 milliseconds. Oh, I missed it again. You know, it's like it's always done by a computer. It's always been programmatically purchased, and it became the noun. I just try and buy it. And I remember I used to argue with people. They're like, some ads aren't programmatic. I'm like, if it's on the internet, it's a programmatic ad. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, it's a computer.
You're pushing water uphill with that one. Come on.
I used to have a lot more energy. I don't pick those fights anymore. You know,
I know how you feel. What would be your dream metrics? What do you guys get measured on? What's the best? What's like? How is it most successfully executed?
I will try and take you down a blockchain rabbit hole if you're willing to come with me. But I think that what we are seeing is the adoption of blockchain in a way as someone that loves it, never really anticipated it. Like I think 4 years ago when we started Alchemy, I did not think you'd have people like BlackRock creating exchange traded products for Bitcoin, which was like made up by someone anonymous in 2008 as a new way for money to exist. You know, that is a long way past where I thought it would go. At least the speed at which it's being adopted is certainly quicker than I thought. It's quicker than the internet was since it was commercially available. It's quicker than mobile phones since they were commercially available. And I will caveat that by saying that you need the internet for blockchains to exist, and it's easier to access them from mobile phones. So I think it's very much kind of standing on the shoulders of two technological giants. But what I think will happen is that the number one use case, in my opinion, for crypto and blockchains is stable coins. So like a digital version of a dollar is like very easy to transact with. I think you'll see more people transacting with stable coins, and there will be just more people using wallets more often, for whether that's like logging into a platform. You can do that now with zero knowledge logins. You use your email address, it creates a wallet, and then that wallet is a really persistent identifier that is anonymous by nature. So like you don't know that an email created that wallet. There's like this hash value that stops those two things being tied together, but that starts to tie stuff that like things that search had a chokehold on for a very long time. You know, like if I walk past a billboard outside of the office for Adidas and I go to Google and search Adidas trainers and purchase it, it's like the billboard made me want to buy them, but
yeah,
the search engine gets attributed with the sale. Now if there's a wallet involved in that, that wallet can be like, that will track which ads it saw over a period of time. So like it may be that you're logging into a website that you logged into the Financial Times with your wallet and you read articles about the bond markets, and then you've seen an ad for Nike. searched it and then purchased the ads through that wallet, it's like, okay, well, actually, it's more than likely that it was the ad on the Financial Times that delivered that sale, not the search that took place after that, that's then attributed towards this wallet. So I think it will just create a much stickier and persistent identifier to like solve last click attribution and then be able to deliver the proceeds of that sale to the venue which actually generated it, which will do a really good job for funding that publication longer term. So like just really well, just the attribution model gets fixed to some degree. And then that's what you get measured on. It's like, did you drive a sale of a particular product or did you drive a sign up to a particular platform? It will kind of go back to probably a lot of the metrics that you talk to brands about, the ones that like move the needle for them, not that there was a million impressions of this ad. It's like that. It's just that needs to happen to get to this point. But really, that's what you want to know is that like, hey, this dollar equaled this result. And we can then kind of piece the route to that and then invest in the bits that are driving those actions. So that is what I think it will go back to what it used to be to some degree, where it's just like, just how do you drive attributions? Become a little bit more performance-based to some degree, just because you're able to tie it together in a completely different way. I guess not too dissimilar to the way that the app market really kicked off. You know, like you had a device ID that wasn't necessarily meant to be an identifier, but happened to be a really good one for the 2 years that you had your phone, so it didn't change. And then it's like cookies were the same too, right? Like it was just like it was there to remember that you'd put something in your basket, or it went back to the page that you just viewed halfway down it rather than back to the top again. You know, like they weren't built to target ads, but became quite a neat way to target ads. And that feels like what is happening very much with my advertising ad tech on with wallets, the proliferation of wallets and people using wallets more regularly in day-to-day activity. It's an alphanumeric key. It doesn't change. It stores a ton of information that is anonymized and can be used really nicely to then attribute ads and kind of figure out what that person likes without ever knowing who they are individually. You know, like it's quite a neat solution to regulations. I mean, the adoption of the new technology. And provides verifiable data. So like in a world where like tons of information is going to be created by autonomous agents, you know, like having a verifiable proof of, okay, this is this type of information that came from here is going to be great for us to determine kind of what was created by whom and where, which I think is probably going to be the next issue that we have to deal with.
Okay, interesting. So basically this sort of the adoption of a stable coin allows us to, as a society, you know, use the technology of cryptocurrency without the social construct of something like a Bitcoin. And then the wallet is perhaps terribly named because it sounds like you're thinking of it more as a digital identifier, an anonymous digital identity, rather than just a payment system.
Yeah. The prevalence to date with blockchain has been like financial instruments. Like a lot of the people that I meet in my kind of course of travel at blockchain conferences are like from TradFi or private equity or finance or whatever. Like it's been like that's a huge market, there's tons of dollars that run through it. This was a new solution to that, but that's like just one of the solutions that it can be used for. I think like I always die joking says, but like nearly everyone that is on the internet, like company wise, becomes an ad tech company to some degree. You know, like you get to a certain point where like our user numbers have like started to flatten out a bit. Like, how else are we going to make some money? And it's like, oh, like we could monetize this audience to some degree. And I think that is what we'll start to see happen. And it's just, you have to kind of interact with the blockchain, you have to connect your wallet. And then you actually have to like sign a transaction that says, I give explicit permission for this application to access information in my wallet. So it's like better than the consent banners that you'll see, because it's like you physically are giving it permission rather than consent. And it's like different, it's the nuance for different things.
I like that.
And you then have like a means by which some value can then be transferred along that to an individual. Like I don't think that's quite been cracked yet. I think like where like if you were to get paid for viewing an ad, like that incentive mechanism is wrong, because you would then go view 1,000 ads and you'd get paid $3, and the brand's like, oh my God, this one person's viewed 1,000 ads, that's no good for us. But like, then if you only view one, you're getting like 1,000 of $3, and it's like, what is the point in that? But like the the incentive mechanism. No one's quite cracked that yet. And in like instances where like a low dollar value would have a big impact on someone's life, there isn't the same dollar value attributes to the ads that they would see. Do you know what I mean? And then it's, so then the opposite's true for like, okay, there's a high dollar value to this particular audience, but they have high dollars anyway. So it's never like, it never matches up. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always found that sort of the value exchange at the heart of our industry a really fascinating thing. I do think it's driven a lot of our thinking at Good Loop, because you're right, no one has cracked it. You know, there's the sort of Amazon Smile type shop and will donate stuff on the one end of the spectrum. Then there's these sort of apps that come and go where you can sign up and watch ads and get money off your phone credit, money off your phone bill, that sort of thing. And you're right, like if you financially reward the user, it's never a meaningful amount, like enough to really move the needle. But at the other end of the scale, if you incentivize them with non-financial incentives, you undervalue the inventory, right? There's a ton of incentivized inventory on mobile gaming, but no premium advertiser wants to be like, oh, go on, watch our shitty ad and then you get 3 coins and a next level.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Accepting that your ad is a necessary evil, which I mean, all advertisers are slightly egomaniacs and we think our brands are wonderful. And so you don't want to have to pay people to watch your ads. But the reality is that people are paying to avoid them, right? Like Scott Galloway has this fabulous saying that advertising is becoming a tax on the poor, because if you're rich enough, you subscribe to Spotify Premium, you subscribe to Netflix, and you never see an ad again. And so we do need to think about this value exchange. And this is where Good Loop sits at the heart of that. And a lot of my kind of philosophy around Good Loop is we should reward people for their attention. Their attention should be earned, not forced. Mm. But let's do something that's about social impact, because it's got a more inherent link to the brand values. It's not random points on a game. You know, you watch an ad for Dove and you fund self-esteem projects in schools. You watch an ad for the Ford Bronco and you fund the conservation of wildlife across North America. Like that's what the value exchange is at Good Loop. And I think that kind of gets, in my view, to a nice middle ground. And where it's really interesting, as you're sort of alluding to with this like extension of the blockchain into like our digital identity and how we control our permission, you know, what if there was a way to tell the internet, these are the things that matter to me. And if you want a piece of my value, if you want a piece of my data or a piece of my time or a piece of my income, then you need to have some sort of impact on sustainability or mental health or animal conservation, you know, whatever matters to me. Like, I think that's a really, really exciting kind of future that like both our companies could be a part of.
I don't know. I feel like the industry is like ripe for like some big changes to happen. It's been a lot around like new ways to target, new ad formats, you know, like that. Has been a lot of the innovation. I think that you just need to like take a step back a little bit and just like look at the actual problems that need solving. And I think that our view is that like capital is wildly inefficient in digital advertising. Like what happens if you solve that problem? Like markets get more efficient, publications get funded better, you know, like cost of acquisitions go down. Like if a brand can acquire a customer for less, you'd hope they might reduce the cost of their good, because that is baked in, so partly baked into the cost they charge is like the cost of marketing, and there's other things. Some brands would, some brands wouldn't.
But you're right. I mean, it's such incremental change. Like when I started Good Loop, there was famously that study, and this is old now, but there was famously that study where you put a pound into the system and 30p ended up at the Guardian. I think it was the Guardian. I think it was through Rubicon time. And last year, the ANA did their transparency study with Fiducia, and they found that you put a dollar into the system and 43.9 cents ended up at the end publisher. So, you know, in a decade, we've squeezed 10 cents out of the system. It's progress.
It is progress, yeah. I also think it's an average, you know, like I'm sure there's percentages that are worse, because
Oh,
I
no
think
doubt.
I read the same report and it was like billions of ad impressions were kind of a part of the study, and like I think it was like 50 odd million were actually like matched end to end. So I always think like, well, that's 5%, you know? So like if a plane was safe 5% of the time, I wouldn't go on one. So it's like how accurate is that study, and like what is the real, we'll never know what is the real picture in terms of the fees that are being taken. Too many companies, you know, like there's only 57 cents of a dollar going around. It's not
Too many
tons
mouths
of
to
dollars
feed.
left. Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think that there's maybe their study. I don't know how often they do the studies, but
Every year, I believe. There should be one coming up
is it?
soon.
There you go. We'll see if there's any improvement, and see if we've like scaled 50 cents yet or not. But
A little sneak preview in this year, 2025's ANA transparency study. We are layering sustainability into the measurement, so we can actually
Oh,
look at
nice.
the emissions factor across the supply path, which will be really interesting. So keep an eye out for that.
So yeah, talking of next year's study, like what is your view for the next 3 to 5 years? Like, where do you see Goodloop? How do you see that playing into like whatever the market looks like? And I appreciate neither of us have crystal balls, but
I think my overall thesis it doesn't change, which is that brands will increasingly need to connect with people about issues that they care about. And this sort of ever more fragmented consumer marketplace almost like the brandification of identity, everyone is a brand and every person has their own sphere of influence and their own issues that they care about. We almost need to think of every individual consumer as a mini influencer. And in that world, every brand has to create value for that influencer and for that influencer's community. So, like, I say that to say I don't think the direction of travel is changing in terms of brands needing to stand for something and have a point of view on societal matters. There's a lot of people that say, oh, everyone just wants their beer to be beer. I've heard that a lot, actually, especially in the wake of this election in the States. There's a lot of sentiment of like, well, brands shouldn't get mired in culture wars. They shouldn't get mired in culture wars. You don't wade into the Black Lives Matter movement if you have no credibility or history of action. But equally, a brand that doesn't have a point of view on civil rights in America doesn't have a place in Gen Z's future, because that's the most diverse generation in history. And the generation after that is 10 times more diverse. That humanity is only going in one direction. And so we have to build brands that have a point of view and stand for something. Now, how that operates across a programmatic landscape, I think sustainability is a sort of canary in the coal mine of, like, it is too wasteful, it is too inefficient, and we have devalued the things that make the system valuable. We have devalued user experience, we have devalued the end consumer and their data and the consent around that, and we have devalued journalism that gives our advertisers a relevant and interesting context in which to play. And so, like, I hope the next 5 years are about going back to those things, going back to a more transparent and clear value exchange, a more premium, more respectful user experience. That's like, I would love to see a world where people are in control of their own data through a wallet or whatever means. And I would love to see a world where if you want some of my time and attention, then you better do some good. You better take action on the things that matter to me. That puts consumers in the driving seat in a really meaningful way in the next decade.
It's a simplification of something that has got very, very complicated over. It's become tricky, you know, like it's
It's
buying
become
ads up
tricky.
front.
My headline.
Yeah, has yeah,
Pragmatic
it's
influence.
certainly it, yeah. I think just even understanding all the acronyms and whatever it is, this can be. I think I agree with you. I think that we have a slightly different, like a different approach to, I guess, like the simplification of the way in which ads are bought and sold. I think that the unlock from blockchain rails and like what they can be used for, I think is going to be very, very interesting to play out. Like I think the ability to use dollars in slightly different ways, I think like over the last, I don't know, whatever it's been now, 8 or 9 years, like interest rates have been high, or maybe not as long as it's quite low, but people have got used to generating a yield from dollars. And I don't think that your marketing budget should be treated any differently to that. Like a lot of it, the time it does sit idle and doesn't generate anything other than like waiting to be spent and then potential new customers in the future. And I think that a blockchain provides, I don't think everyone will do this and it'll take a little while for it to become commonplace, but a blockchain provides a way for you to like securely use those dollars to generate more dollars by putting that liquidity to work and becoming more efficient in terms of not just how the capital's spent, but like how it's used while it's not being spent, I think will be kind of top of mind. So like your marketing budget can work for you twice with a blockchain, before it's spent and then whilst it's being spent acquiring new customers. And that I hope is where we end up going, because then that does become quite compelling in terms of like value that's provided to people that are spending money online or generating income from the money that is spent online.
Interesting. That's a novel idea. I like it. I would imagine also blockchain is quite a significant role to play in the sort of the future of truth.
Yeah,
so few ways for us to tell what's real anymore.
Yeah, I think that is like one of the, like, people take it for, I think, granted now, but like, and people actually often say that there's a lot of scams in crypto, or are scams, but equally I'd say there's a lot of scams with cash, probably significantly more. But what quite often happens if there has, so there, let's take, there's a company called Bybit. They had a well-reported scam, unfortunately, $1.3 billion was hacked from their wallets, but they were able to, through like forensic analysis of blockchain, just find the wallets where that money went to. Like you can just see where, when you follow the entire chain, you can see exactly the people that took it. And I think that is like one of the features of a blockchain, is that like if you go to Etherscan right now, you can see every single transaction that's taking place, what was transferred from wallet A to wallet B, and where did it go on that path. So like it does just provide a immutable record of what took place, and I think that is going to become more and more important as like the volume of content increases exponentially with the with how easy it is to create content with artificial intelligence. It's going to be insane. Like the barrier to entry to just creating stuff is like zero now. It's like $20 a month and you can do whatever you want to do. And just like we've come such a long way since that. I think it was like Will Smith eating spaghetti video to now, like where it's like hard to tell the difference between what is AI generated and what isn't. So like, yeah, a stamp or a record of what is genuine and what isn't, report created by AI, so it's not genuine, but yeah, blockchains, that's, they're amazing for that. There's probably not many better solutions.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've probably covered just about everything aside from the meaning of life at this point. Amy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, and looking forward to seeing all the good that you'll do with GoodLoop this year and years in the future.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all.